Today's episode is brought to you by Fire Facilities. Make training count with their custom-made, all-steel live fire training facilities. Their made-in-the-USA towers and burn rooms are the best for preparing, responding, and surviving the challenges you face every day.
I don't know how we got there. But, oh, it was the question about, you know, how are you received in your department. I think that, overall, I think that there's some friction that goes along with, you know, putting yourself out there. But I wasn't satisfied with, and we made a lot of progress. A group of us in our department made a lot of progress, and did a lot of really good things, of which I, you know, played a small part. And I did what I could where I could. But I really felt like by doing what I was doing nationally and having some things published and having the voice that I had, I was hoping that somehow those things would find their way back to my department. And in some ways they have. So, but it's all about trying to drive positive change. That's what the whole thing's been about, you know, and again, working through those things myself and feeling that they were these things that I was discovering, you know, in terms of what I was learning and finding out, they were beneficial to me. I figured that they were going to be beneficial to somebody else. I wanted to share it. So that's where it kind of came from.
I hear you. The right back there was the first article I ever wrote, published in Firehouse. And I, like yourself, I never brought it up to anybody. I don't talk about my podcast. I don't talk about, you know, training outside of the department. Never did any of that for a couple of reasons. One, I didn't feel like I'm less worried about me than anything I have to. I'd rather people hear what I have to say or know anything about me. It's, you know, it's about the message. It's about sharing. But so I get that published. I didn't tell a single soul that I was doing it. I didn't tell a single soul that it came out. Nothing. It was just a goal that I had set that I was able to meet. So I was doing a class in my department, and one of the guys that's actually in the picture in Firehouse that I used comes up to me, and he goes, he was a captain at the time. He goes, shakes my hand in front of everybody. Oh man, I read that article. He goes, that was a great article. I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I liked it. Hey, good job. You know, all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, I wasn't prepared for this. Right. I was like, oh, thank you. I didn't know what to say. 2 seconds later, one of his guys come up to me. He comes in. He's like behind him, and he hears him saying this to me. And I see the guy shake his head like this, just puts his head down. Now, the person that's shaking his head is probably the most honorable, you know, true person I've ever met. And someone I'm proud to call a friend, he walks up to me. He goes the entire way. I asked him, we'll call him Larry. I said, so Larry, what are you shaking your head? He goes, the entire trip out to the training center, all he did was bag on how stupid that article was. And then the second he gets off the truck, he says that to you. And I was like, I realized in the moment, either he was telling the truth to me or he was telling the truth in the truck. Well, when somebody does that, you get the luxury of picking which one you want to believe. So I'm like, man, I'll just believe the one that he said to me. But I did learn. That was my indoctrination into that people that you work with will have a different view, going back to what we said earlier, because they've seen the whole you. They've seen you make mistakes, or maybe you come to work and you're just having a bad day. Or a million years ago, I got divorced while I was in the firehouse with my first wife, and I was just unbearable in the firehouse. I couldn't help it. I wasn't mean to people. I just wasn't me. I wasn't the class clown. I wasn't joking around. I was just, you know, heartbroken the whole time. And, you know, you look at it now and, you know, who's your friend in the firehouse? Who isn't? Who's jealous? I struggle with that word jealousy, anybody being jealous of me, because I don't feel like there's anything unique about me except my good looks. Obviously my good looks, you can see me. If you're listening on the podcast, go to my YouTube channel. You're gonna look extremely handsome. It's like Elvis and Evel Knievel had a baby. You know what I'm saying? If that was possible.
Right. Right. And the fountain of youth, because you're 13, right?
I'm 13. So. Well, I'll be 13 next month. Yeah. Sorry, I'm 55. I'm an old man. But yeah, that's tough. But it also, it can either inspire you to move forward or quiet you to not do anything else. And, you know, I think about that. I mean, how many times has that happened to somebody in the fire service and they took it the other way? Like, oh man, I better not say anything. You know, we have a responsibility in the fire service, like you said earlier, you know, to help nurture, help, and the other generations. Now, either say something honest or don't say anything at all. But we do have that responsibility. So you were in the fire service for 22 years, right? So you've seen a bunch of generations.
25 and a half, yeah. But
25 and a half, okay. Mm-hmm. What is it about the different generations that you've noticed since you've been in the fire service? I mean, the Gen X, the baby boomers, there's not a ton of those left, I guess, but, you know, millennials and all that stuff. Does your message, do you feel like your message holds true with them as well? Or have you had to kind of change it based on what's happening in the fire service today?
I don't think the message of leadership really changes that much based upon generations. I think generally speaking, you know, people want to contribute and they want to feel valued, and you just have to figure out a way to communicate with them and show them that you care about them. And I think that's the most important thing. And the people that I really admired most and gravitated, you know, towards the most in my career maybe weren't the most technically competent or into the job, but what I learned the most about, you know, how to do the job was how to treat people. You know, and I think that's the most important thing, is building relationships in the fire service. And, you know, obviously you have to be, you know, technically competent. You have to be really good at your job. But I've heard it said, and I don't know where, that people will forgive a certain amount of technical incompetencies, and you can't be incompetent, but technical shortcomings in their bosses or whoever, if they know that their bosses genuinely care about them and have their self-interest in mind or their best interest in mind. Mm-hmm. And they'll actually work harder for you knowing that you care about them. And I think that that's the most important thing, is that, you know, it transcends every generation. If we can show people that we genuinely care about them and have empathy for them and are making, creating pathways towards that, you know, towards good communication and showing them the way and investing in them. So in terms of really tailoring my leadership message to people, no, it's been the same, you know, ever since I've started. And there's nuances within that, and you do have to tailor your style to the individual, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But as far as like broad based generational stuff, I don't know. I don't really see that as much. As it's more about sitting down one on one and in terms of, you know, painting Generation X or Millennials or Generation Y with a certain brush and saying, you talk to these people this way and these people this way. No, I sit down with people individually and say, here's what I bring to you. This is what I give to you. And in return, this is what I expect from you. This is the standard that we're going to uphold. And if I'm not living up to that, then if either one of us aren't living up to that, then we have to revisit it.
I've noticed, for me, what I noticed as a training officer was the changes had to be made, in new recruits, because we were getting way more millennials. And one of the things that happened to me was I had a certain millennial who has since, fantastic firefighter, great guy. He was a great guy then, but he kept asking me why every day, no matter what we did, why? And I got so aggravated. So one day I ended up making him, I forget exactly, it was like made him strip down an axe and painting it and everything. And I went home that night and I was just furious. I was like, oh, and then it hit me all at once. I wasn't furious at him. I was furious that I didn't know the answers. It was my own ego that was getting in the way of being an effective instructor. And wife's kind of like, I mean, she saw the light come on and she's like, what just happened? I'm like, well, as per usual, I just realized I've been an asshole. So from that day forward, I changed everything as far as, when I do trainings, because especially the new recruits, I build in the why now, and I'm not afraid to say I don't know something. It's perfectly fine for me to say, you know what, I don't know that, but I will get you the answer. So for me, learning the generations was very important, because I realize now that there's certain generations, younger generations, love the why. They love why. They love the technology stuff that you and I well, I don't know. We're Gen Xers. We had a lot of technology back in the day. It wasn't the same technology, but, you know, Gen X is the best generation anyway. So, but we all know this. But they know. So I'm probably, that's, I got some millennial traits in me, because I love technology. I really, truly do. But once you realize that, I guess the point I was getting at for me and my questioning was, once you realize the different and acknowledge the different generations, the different types of people, that your message sometimes can fall flat, like it did in my situation, without considering what they do. Now, you have such a broad and a really wonderful message on leadership. When it comes to leadership, if you had to boil it down to like an elevator speech, the problems with leadership today in the fire service, what would that look like? I could give you mine while you think about it. Right?
Elevator pitch. So, I don't know. I think we're just not patient enough to build those relationships with people. I think that's the root cause of everything is lack of communication. And when pride and ego get in the way, you know, that's the big thing. And that's why, you know, I say, you know, part of, you know, one of the things I think I've said a number of times is great leaders are great communicators. Mm-hmm. And finding a way to communicate with those people, you know, understanding that you weren't reaching that individual because they needed to know the why, and then becoming frustrated with yourself, and then altering your game plan to tailor your delivery style to that individual. That's what good leaders do. Great coaches can create change within a person without creating animosity. Right? So we can reach people in many different ways. So I guess, you know, the whole thing, you know, if there's an elevator pitch or a catchphrase I would use, it's quick change happens slowly. You know, you have to, and Bill Walsh said that. Seriously, and Bill Walsh said that, you know, it's building trust and creating that organizational change, and that trust with, you know, in the leader takes a long time. Everybody wants it to happen overnight, and it simply doesn't happen that way. And we do have to invest in, you know, our people and be honest self-evaluators on both sides and realize that it's a two-way street. So I don't know. That was more than 30 seconds, but what's your pitch? Still,
I think it's very similar. Mine is, the lack, you can't be a good leader if you don't understand communications, and communications isn't talking. It can be, but I have noticed, it's been my experience over and over again, that leaders either avoid communicating, purposely communicate incorrectly, or have no idea the power that they hold with communications. Having a crucial conversation, for example, I love that book. I've got all kinds of books over here on leadership, on crucial conversations, fierce conversations, emotional intelligence. But I feel like that's what's kind of lacking today. And you could make an argument, at least I think I could, for a generational thing. If I go back to the mid 90s when I joined, I had baby boomers as my bosses. Baby boomers, you know, right out of World War II, pretty much told you what to do and you did it. That's how I got into the fire service. I didn't have a voice. I couldn't say anything back. At the time, I had no problem with it. I knew what I was getting into. But as we evolved throughout the fire service, then leadership to me, so you went from just telling people what to do. That was effective communication. It wasn't the best, but it was effectively communicated. They weren't worried about my feelings. They weren't worried about, you know, any of that stuff. They were mission driven. Just because that's a good trait of that generation. But I have noticed over time that's a lost art. You know, leadership is an art, not a science. And I feel like the same thing could be said about communication. And I think the higher you go up in the ranks, the more powerful your communication should be. And it's just not. And sometimes it's saying just one or two things. Sometimes it's saying nothing. Sometimes it's saying a whole lot. But communication to me is the key to a good leader. If you're not a good leader, if you're a great leader, I should say, but you cannot communicate, then how are you a good leader? Does that make sense?
You're not. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, as you were, I wrote down this thought. I think Simon Sinek said it. I'm not sure, but some of, you know, the people that I follow in terms of leadership stuff that I read, you know, communication is all about listening. It's not about waiting for your turn to talk. You have to, and that's a lot of times what happens is people are just waiting for their turn to talk and they don't understand. You have to be able to listen and hear, meaning you know, the information hits your ears, but you have to process it and really understand where that person's coming from. And that's why the word empathy is something that I've been really, using a lot lately when I go around and do my talks is, you know, it's being able to understand where people are coming from and put yourself in their shoes. And that's how you tailor your leadership style, to the individual, where even in a group setting, because you've built that relationship with a person, they believe so fervently in what, in your belief in them, that even in a group setting, they feel like you're speaking to them individually. Mm-hmm. And, to your point, if you're not a master communicator, you cannot be an effective leader. I mean, the best leaders are great communicators, and they can rally people towards a cause, even if it's a terrible one. Leaders are leaders. Leadership is nothing more than the ability to create influence. And that's what we're trying to do. And we do that through caring about people and through empathizing with them. And that starts with communication, really understanding, listening to what they have to say, hearing it and understanding how to best reach them based upon who they are and meeting them where they are right then.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I've had some great people that are excellent communicators, and they rode the back for their entire career, but you could not wait to hear these people talk because the guy I'm thinking of particularly was very straight to the point, and he wasn't too worried about the feelings, more the mission. And once I figured that out and quit taking stuff personally, I was like, oh, okay, I get the message. Kind of sounded a little bit like, at least a little bit like the captain that told you to go in your room, sit down, be quiet kind of thing. I don't know that would be a good example of great communications, but I do believe you can learn from every firefighter you ever meet, because even if they're the worst firefighter, worst leader, whatever you want to, fill in the blank there, because people are either examples of a do or a don't. And, I have been probably more of a don't than a do a lot of my career, but that's kind of how I view people. So I've worked with people and they've said, hey, oh, you can forget what he says. He's an idiot. You know what he's talking about. And I'm like, no, I mean, you can learn from someone's bad behavior. I don't have to do what he does. I can see him for what he is. But again, leadership to me is an art, not a science. Would you agree with that? Or do you lean towards more of a sort of a strategic play by play when it comes to leadership, learning leadership?
I gravitate more towards, I mean, there's a lot of science to back up, what we do and the different parts of the brain that we appeal to when we treat people a certain way and stuff like that. And that's great. And that's nice to know and everything, but I'm more of a big picture guy. I don't really get down to the whole nuts and bolts of, which part of the brain when I talk to a person this way or that way. My whole thing is I do believe that you can teach leadership to people. I also believe that some people are born with stuff, but in terms of, is there a playbook to it? Yeah. I mean, if there's one thing, it's treat people right. It's know who your people are and be a good human, because good human traits are good leadership traits. They're the same thing. I mean, if you, Candy Ashby, who I really like, who does a great class at FDIC on leadership and does it all over the place. She's brilliant and very busy. One of the things that she did in her presentation that I really liked was she goes, and she's real folksy and she's got kind of a Southern accent and everything. And she gets up there and she goes, now tell me, she does a group brainstorming thing. She goes, tell me what some great leadership characteristics are. And so people list them all. And she basically writes them all down. She goes, aren't those good people traits too? Aren't those good human traits? Good leaders are good humans. And you could have just said, class over. Yeah, but it's true. And I think that's, you can teach people step-by-step stuff, but the thing that they have to really buy into first off, and if they never do it, is that their job is to serve other people. If they're not leading in service of others, then it's never going to work and people are going to see right through it. And so, if there's a starting point, and I said it when I was nervous as hell the first time I did FDIC, the first thing I said was, if you're not putting your people first, you're doing it wrong. That was one of the first statements I made. This is all about people. And in leadership, if you're not putting your people first, you're doing it wrong. And I launched into my thing. And I still believe that. Our job is to develop people and make sure that they feel safe coming to work, and they know that they're going to go home based upon your knowledge, skills, and ability. And that you're technically competent, and you're gonna get them through the shift, both physically, emotionally, mentally. And that's our job.
And it seems so simple, doesn't it? Then the idea just seem like the most simplest idea in the world is be nice, consider other people and where they're at in life, and
The Phoenix model, in terms of just being nice, that's the oversimplification of it. That's pretty much all you need to know. Don't be a dick is what I say.
Now, my wife says that about me, but she'll remind
So
me, bless her little heart.
does mine. So anyway.
I've collected two of them, so at this point, it's got to be my fault. So, I mean, what are you going to do? I
Well, at
do think
least you
it's
realize it.
amazing. What's that?
I said, at least you realize it.
Yeah, like everything, I'm late in the game, man. Everything I do is late, right? And I'm not mad about it. It's who I am. I'm just now listening to this brand new band called Journey. They're awesome. That's I know, right? That's seriously, I'm just kidding about that. But that's usually me. I get music late. I get movies late. I get books late. I get things in my career late. I've been that way, and I used to hate it forever. I was just like, oh my God, I want to change. And then when I was in college, it was I always panicked about getting stuff done on time. And then when I realized that you always get stuff done, that this is your process, under just believe in your process, it made things so much easier for me. I don't stress about anything anymore because I know, yeah, I'm late. Maybe I'm just going to, my wife will play, Aha, Take on Me, and I'll go, oh, that's a great song, man. Who sings that? She'll look at me like I'm an idiot. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna start listening to
That's
them,
aha that's aha from 40 years ago. Yeah, cool.
40 years ago. I'm telling you, I'm late to the game on everything. But again, that's me. That's me. I do want to ask you something though. I always like to end on the best prank, firehouse prank that's ever been played on you or you played on somebody else.
Okay, so the best firehouse prank, it was actually played on me, and it went for years, and I didn't know it. So, as we've kind of talked about throughout this conversation, when you're doing things and trying to push and affect change and have a voice in your department, you're not always the most well-liked person, right?
Right.
And I think one day I had gotten coverage to go teach at the academy or something like that. I can't remember, but I was gone for part of the day and I came back to the shift late. And my company officer, one of the things that he used to say to me every night at dinner, he used to reinforce to me, he would wait until, he would be silent the entire dinner. We'd have eight people at dinner at our station that I worked at. And he'd be silent the entire dinner until the conversation turned on me. And once someone started talking shit to me, basically, he would jump all over it. Ah, and just, he wouldn't say anything the entire dinner because he hated me, this one company officer, and probably with good reason. The feeling was kind of mutual. He wasn't a bad guy, but just we didn't get along, and I, anyway, he would say every night, nobody likes you. You know that, right? Nobody likes you. Everybody hates you, pretty much. And everybody would just laugh, and it would be kind of like a
Right.
joke, and it didn't really sting me very much because I didn't really value anything he had to say. But one night I went to went out and I'd come back from the academy, and they had dinner, and one of the guys cooked this really awesome, authentic Asian meal, and it was super good. I mean, he went to the point where they got fortune cookies, and they saved me a plate. They had gotten done eating, and they saved me a plate, and it had a fortune cookie on it and everything. And when I got done eating and everybody's sitting around talking and everything, they go, "Hey man, open your fortune cookie." So I open my fortune cookie, I crack it open, and in the fortune inside said, "Nobody likes you, make better friends." And I went, "Oh my God." I freaked out. I go, "You gotta be kidding me that this says this." And everybody's, they're all, "No way." And I pass it around and everything. And I couldn't believe that I got a fortune cookie because it was written like very like Confucius. Confucius says, "Nobody likes you, make better friends." And I was like, "Oh my God, no way." And so for years, I had it taped on the inside of my locker, and I thought it was legit. Like it was just chance, happenstance that I got that fortune in my cookie. And I was talking about it one time. I go, man, I can't believe that I got that. And somebody finally said to me, they go, you know, we did that, right? I'm like, what?
Oh, you didn't know the whole time?
No, I had no idea. I go, I thought it was just, it was just random luck of the draw. Like that was like a legit fortune. It's like, make new friends. Nobody likes you. And I'm like, oh my God. And so it must have been 5 or 6 years later. He goes, yeah, dude, we fished that thing out and stuffed the other one in. And he goes, nobody told you? I go, no, I've been carrying that around. It's still in my locker. I mean, I might still have it somewhere, but, and somebody actually got mad at him for telling me because they're like, oh, dude, we were going to try to carry that all the way through to your retirement and let you know at your retirement breakfast that was, so that's probably, you know, of all the ones that I can think of, that's the one that kind of stands out to me. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, filling someone's boots up with shaving cream or dumping water on somebody. I think that was one of the better ones that got me on. Yeah. It was great.
Mm-hmm. The simple ones are the better ones, right? That like whenever I try to do them, mine are so complicated and convoluted. If they pay off, it's not worth the effort, right? But right. I've seen those where people do just the gentlest of nudges, and it just makes all the difference.
But I think mine actually served as fuel. I'm like, oh, okay, nobody likes me. Watch this, right? I'll turn it up, right? I probably made it worse. But I think it, you know, sometimes that stuff, you know, when you feel like you're backed into a corner, you feel like you're the underdog, it makes you work harder. So. Yeah, it wasn't.
I think you're right. You know, I actually had a captain tell me I got transferred from a very busy house to the headquarters for this captain. And the captain, we didn't get along either. And he finally pulled me aside at the bay. He goes, look, and this crushed me. I'm not going to lie. This crushed me. He goes, I was going to put it out there. He goes, I didn't ask for you. I didn't want you here. And I didn't ask to go there either, and I didn't want him as my captain, so I said it back. To be honest, I said it back to hurt him like he had just hurt me. He was just telling me matter-of-factly. He probably wasn't even trying to hurt me. But listening to what you're saying is just the opposite effect for me. When he said that to me, it absolute crushed me. I was like in the dumps. And the worst part of it was it became a little joke around dinner time and the coffee, you know, in the morning and all that was, I didn't ask for you. That was like the running joke. Every time you would think that it would take the sting out of it. Now, me and him got to work. We worked together for several years after that. We worked very well together. And I think he's a great guy and a great friend. But at first we had those, you know, we bumped.
Well, I think the thing that's important and one of the things that I really believe is super important that especially at you know that we involve our youth in sports is it teaches them about humility, it teaches about teamwork, and it teaches them about, you know, upholding their end of the bargain in certain circumstances. And that's why I think that there's a trend away from team athletics. Like team athletic participation is down, and it has been, and I kind of shudder for where we're headed because you know, we have to figure out how to work together, and sports is a really good learning environment for that, where you learn about, you know, hard work and dedication and how what you do directly affects the person next to you. And I think that's something that, you know, sometimes is lost on people.
So. My dad, huge into sports, my brothers, and my dad made me play every sport growing up. I had to try every sport at least once. And I'm the most uncoordinated person you'll ever meet. If you don't believe me, try to throw something across the room to me. I won't even catch. I'm terrible sports, but I did play all of them. All this to say, yeah, I did learn that. I did learn that I fit in, that as bad as I was still part of a group, and that my dad would always tell me, you have an obligation. This is your obligation. Now, when it's done and you've completed your obligation, then you don't have to ever go back, but you've made an obligation. Well, truth is he made the obligation, but I understood what he said. And then, but I didn't think about it consciously until I joined the military. And I was like, oh, okay. Now I get it. I see, you know, and then of course in the fire service. So it, again, goes right back to me taking things. It takes me forever to learn something or notice something, but anyway, right. I digress.
No, but I mean, it's, you know, you don't have to be able to throw or catch a ball to understand the principles of team play. Right. So,
right.
You know,
well, brother, listen, I appreciate your time. I know it's you got a lot on your plate right now. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate you being here and how cool it is for me as a fanboy to sit here and spend an hour talking to you. And I know you probably are thinking, why me? But, you know, your message affects people out there. You and I have never met before, and your message has affected me for years now. So this is a big deal for me to meet you and talk to you. And I just thank you so much for all your time.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on your show. And thank you for, you know, all that you just said. But, you know, we're all just trying to leave it better than we found it. And if we get enough of us saying and doing the right things, we're going to. So thank you. Thank you for what you do.
Stay safe, brother.
You too.
Today's podcast was sponsored by Fire Facilities, industry-leading designers and manufacturers of realistic, built-to-last training structures for more than 30 years. Make your training count. Visit firefacilities.com for more information.